Welcome to the Misophonia Podcast. This is Season 3, Episode 9. My name's Adil Ahmad, and I have misophonia. This week, my conversation again is from the UK, this time with author Rachel Beckles. Rachel came to my attention when I found a short story she wrote called Golden that revolves around misophonia. We talk about that, her background with miso, misokinesia, growing up in a family with miso, as well as dealing with miso as a mother with two young children. Hey, so before we get to that, real quick, that Instagram group chat I talked about last week quickly ballooned to dozens of people, and we're always happy to add more. Just hit me up at Misophonia Podcast on Instagram to get added. Also, if you have a GitHub account, software engineers and developers, you'll know what I'm talking about. Look for the awesome Misophonia repo page on GitHub. I just created it as a place to keep links to all kinds of miso info and resources, research, online groups, nonprofits. Still need some work, but if you're on GitHub, feel free to submit a pull request with changes and I'll merge it in. I'm hoping this will get noticed by more engineers who have been told by therapists make up a large portion of our misophonia community. Anyways, more cool stuff on the Misophonia Podcast website that I'll announce next week. For now, I really want to get right to my conversation with Rachel.
Rachel, welcome to the podcast. It's good to finally speak to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. I really want to get into your writings, the book that you, or the short story you wrote on misophonia. Mm-hmm. And obviously, yeah, I want to hear about your life. But do you want to tell the listeners, I guess, first of all, around kind of where you are in the world?
I'm in London, UK.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's 5 a.m., so I'm very, very quiet at the moment.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I didn't wake up.
Gotcha. Yeah, no worries, no worries. Yeah, thanks for doing that. Let's see, I became aware of you, I think, through your writing. Do you want to talk about, the book you wrote and about misophonia and kind of how that all came to be?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I wrote a short story called Golden, and it was inspired when my daughter wasn't feeling very well. And so it meant for a few days, she just complained and she just sat making a moaning sound. And she lay on my lap because she's only two, bless her, at the time. And she just kept making this complaining sound over and over again. And it drove me mad. So I decided to use that as my muse to write a short story about misophonia. And it was inspired by that Michael Douglas film, you know, Falling Down.
Oh, yes.
And Stephen King's Misery, which are two of my favorite films. I have a dark sense of humor sometimes. I just wrote about what could potentially happen when people are triggered by those frustrating sounds.
Yeah, it's really well written. I won't give it away, but it's not written in a totally linear format. It's kind of remembering something that happened, mm-hmm. and the way you reveal everything it's a really good read, really really good read. I highly recommend people check it out.
Thank you.
So you got a dark sense of humor, you have misophonia. I mean, not everything you write is in this vein. You want to tell us kind of a little bit about what you do professionally?
No, yes. I usually write children's picture books, so very extreme.
Right.
So I have a pen name for my short stories, which is Rebecca Campbell. But I write under my own name for my children's books. So I just write happy, exciting picture books. And I have written a book about anxiety as well, and how I've been able to cope with successful strategies and techniques to overcome my anxiety.
And is that aimed at children, or was it more?
That one's for adults.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just anybody who's experiencing it, really. I would
gotcha.
Say anybody over 10.
Is that something recent that you did, or
I wrote that one last year.
Okay, gotcha. Interesting. And is that and where? Yeah, I guess where are your books available? I mean, they're available everywhere, I would imagine, right?
Yes, they're all available on Amazon.
Excellent. And the even Golden?
Yes.
I think it's available there too. Oh, excellent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. Okay. And so you write professionally, children's books. Have you had interest? Have you in the anxiety book? Is that also published as kind of a similar publisher, or is that something you're kind of like releasing on the side?
It was independently published, but it's available on Amazon as a paperback, ebook, and an audiobook.
Oh wow! Okay, great. Why don't we go back to kind of early days for you? Like, we heard a little bit about your young daughter driving you mad. But let's build up to that point to kind of early days for you. Did you grow up in the London area?
Yes, yeah, I've always lived locally to where I am now.
Okay.
Grew up with my mom and dad and my brother, and I started experiencing misophonia. It wasn't necessarily an anger reaction. It was more of a curiosity, like, what's that noise? Or what is that noise?
An extra sensitivity. What is that noise? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, when people are breathing, I'd be like, what is that noise? Or I'm chewing. Why are you chewing like that? What is that noise?
Was it the usual kind of age, like around pre-pubescent, like late elementary school? Like around...
I think it was really young. I think it was like 5, 6. I'd start to realize, but it just didn't bother me. I think it started to bother me around that pubescent stage. And that's when things like breathing and sniffing and we call it football, soccer, like the background noise, the crowd.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Yeah, the roar and all that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Interesting. So that didn't really work as like a white noise. That was just
No. I could tune it out every now and then, or I still can. But then every now and then I get that, what the hell is that noise? And then I realize it's football.
Oh, okay. Wow. So even to this day, that's
yeah.
And
not my favorite sound.
No. Oh well. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's interesting in London. I mean, that's it's basically it's
everywhere
basically in the blood. And so, how was childhood then? Was it as things got to get more and more annoying? And you were obviously at the time didn't know what it was. Didn't have the tools maybe to deal with it.
It was fine. It was, my brother and I have talked about the same kind of sounds that irritate us. I am very good at laughing it off mostly. Once I've identified what that noise is, and like a lot of your other guests do, I'll mimic it or draw attention to it to everybody so everybody can hear it. And they go, oh, okay, I can hear it now. And then I can say, thank you, I'm not crazy. Everybody can hear the same sound. When I was young, mostly I could brush it off with some kind of humor. As I got older, I used to be a teacher. So there was a lot of sounds there as well. But what I found happened was because there were so many children, and there were so many different noises, they were blended into one noise that I was able to filter out. I think
it
bothered me a lot when I worked in an office, which is a very, very quiet space. And then in that silence, you've got someone who might chew some nuts.
Cough.
And when it's very quiet and someone eats nuts, it's like someone's eaten stones.
Right.
And now I can laugh about it, but if I'm tired or if I was I didn't have anybody to joke about it with or make a comment about it, or I didn't have any headphones to plug in, It might drive me mad. I can get angry. A lot of disgust. Oh my gosh, that is disgusting. Why are you eating like that? And it does make me wear a lot in my head. But yeah, that was when I noticed it the most. That was when it was the hardest to ignore. I don't know if you know about, there's a part of your brain called the reticular activating system. And I learned about it from Tony Robbins, that motivational speaker.
Oh yeah.
And a part of your brain that helps you to tune into things or to tune out of things. So your reticular activating system can help you to focus on a particular sound or look for, like, I love Teslas, so I can always spot a Tesla on the road. And that's my reticular activating system kicking in, always looking out for the Tesla. But with misophonia, we're always looking out for the sound. And then once we've tuned into it, it's hard to tune out of it. So I think that's why I can swing like a pendulum. Sometimes I can be okay with it and switch it off, but sometimes I can't. But I don't know if I'm not a scientist, but I think that combined with our fight or flight, that's why we get so angry or upset. Because once you've tuned into something, your adrenaline's making you think, oh my gosh, what's that noise? Do I need to fight it? Do I need to make it stop? How do I make it stop? It's making me sad. So yeah, I'm just very aware of that. When I had my son, when I was pregnant with my son, because I had known about my reticular activating system, when I get hot or when I get stressed, sometimes I can hear my heartbeat in my ears.
Mm.
And that, at first, I was so confused. And I used to say to doctors, okay, all of my pregnancy symptoms are fine, but I can hear my heartbeat in my ears. And they'd all go, okay, I have no idea what that is. And I'd be like, oh, okay. And I think it's just because I'm able to tune into it sometimes with that reticular activating system. And then sometimes I can't tune it out for a while until I calm down or cool down or I'm not feeling quite so stressed and my adrenaline goes down. So I think it's those things all muddled in together with us misophonias.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this tiredness, stress obviously is a huge catalyst. And I know for me, it's like if I feel any of those things, then my attention cannot be taken away from the trigger. And it is when sometimes if it's like seems to be like financial, like if I have a check I got paid or something, or I saved some money, or then I feel a little bit more, I feel like less stress. If something good happens, I feel less stress. Yeah. And I can handle it. I can it's the sound is not the only thing happening in that moment is kind of my the sensation. There definitely is something. Yeah, definitely is something there. A coping method, at least. That's really interesting. I've never heard it kind of expressed in that way. Thank you, Tony Robbins.
It's very reassuring because then I know it doesn't last forever, and I don't feel overwhelmed by the sound or the action that's happening.
Yeah, I try to tell people. This mimicking never really worked for me. It doesn't work for some people, but I feel like that's kind of almost like a last resort. It doesn't fix it. And then the other something that kind of sometimes helps is like going into a situation and just kind of like buttering your brain up into thinking like, no, nothing's here threatening you. But we don't always remember to do that, and so we're going into a lot of situations cold, and then our attention is being grabbed, and then it's like, how much sleep do we get? Are we stressed out? That's really interesting. So does that kind of change the way you kind of approach situations. It sounds like with your son, it sounded like you were more aware of this and you tried to cope in that way so that he wasn't triggering you. Is that kind of one manifestation of how you or how you use that realization?
I think with him, when I was pregnant, I just became so much more aware of my insides as well as my outside sounds. So even now, like, I can hear my pulse in my ear in the background. But it's not, like, baby sounds don't stress me. It would be sounds like during lockdown, my daughter learned to whistle. But when somebody's practicing to whistle, it's the most painful thing ever. And then once they've mastered it, they're so proud that all they want to do is whistle.
Right.
So it's just things like that. And when she's really happy, her and her little brother pretend to be puppies and they yap and howl. And that's a fun sound. it's interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's talk about maybe lockdown. So right now we're recording this, I guess, in mid-October. Is London back in some kind of a lockdown, or what's the situation there?
We're in a weird limbo where they're trying their hardest not to lock us down again, but things are closing early, and some parts of the north are going into like stronger, more enforced phases of lockdown. But in London, it's not too bad at the moment. So everywhere schools are open and shops, but a lot of things close at 10.
Gotcha. Wait, so
we can only meet up with 6 people at a time.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, you guys had those weird,
group
limits.
Six.
Yeah, the rule of six. And so your schools are all like open, like the kids are all going to school? Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here it's that's not the case in most districts. At least
they've created bubbles. So they're trying to keep each class or each year group as separate as possible.
Yeah.
So that if in the event that there was somebody with word in there, they would isolate that class rather than the whole school.
Gotcha. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, slight digression there, but still on the subject of lockdowns. Sounds like with your kids at home, you became earlier in the year became more aware of sounds. Was that a kind of a rough period? As I'm sure it was for a lot of people. Was it especially rough for you, kind of sonically?
it was a noisy period. And I guess maybe going back to the teaching kind of element, when there's a lot of sounds and they all blur into each other, it wasn't so bad because my husband was working from home, but my son and my daughter were together and playing. But the whistling was hard. There were odd sounds that were quite difficult. I did also get done miso. Is it misokinesia?
Yes. Misokinesia.
Sight one.
Yeah.
So it's hard. I get it especially if I'm eating. So if I'm eating and people are, like my kids are bouncing around or there's a lot of jiggling happening, it makes me feel nauseous, which can make me make everyone sit down and sit still. I need to eat, and then you can do what you want to do, or I need to go in another room so I can eat. But yeah, lockdown, I think there was so much going on that it wasn't the focal of my stress at the time.
Right. this year there's lots of competition for what is the most stressful. Yeah, it's
waiting for dinosaurs to come back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and yeah, I think they're ruling our country over here, but it's another story. Interesting. So you mentioned that it kind of affects you while you're eating. Mm-hmm. Do you need to eat on your own a lot as a family, or does it, or it's not?
If like my children tend to eat before me, so if I'm eating and they're in the same room with me and they're like bouncing around or jumping around, I will ask them to stop just until I've eaten. Or if they're really, really happy and enjoying what they're doing, I'll just go and eat in the kitchen.
Gotcha. Are they aware of your misophonia?
I don't think so. Not
okay.
Yet.
It's not
I'm
something
sure
that you.
Will be soon.
Yeah. No. But it's not something that you're like, mommy has, you know.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
I do say to them, that sounds not fun.
Right. Okay.
That sound is not fun. Please don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So you kind of like. Right, you're very diplomatic about it, but it's not something that you make a focal point of.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. How about your husband? Is he? Is he aware of your miso? I imagine he is.
Yeah.
And
I've explained it to him.
What did he think?
I explain it to him all the time.
Yeah.
He understands as best he can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did
it's,
you, is this
it's
something
quite hard
that,
if you don't have it.
Yeah, absolutely. And is this something that, is this something that you kind of explained to him early on in the relationship, or was it something that kind of came up later?
I think it came up later. I don't know when it came up, actually.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't an early thing.
I know that more and more people these days, as they're becoming, younger people who are, you know, just in whatever, in school or in college, they're kind of, I know some people who, I've talked to some people who are trying to tell people like right away, maybe on the first or second day, just to kind of get that out of the way.
It must be so much nicer now that there's actually a word for it.
Yeah.
Because I do remember explaining to friends when I was at school that hearing you chew chewing gum makes me want to, I don't know, punch you in the face or throw the chewing gum out the window or something. They just thought I was crazy. And we would laugh about it a lot, which is probably where the element of humor came into it.
Humor is a good coping mechanism if you can laugh about something.
I went to stay in a hotel when times were normal with a friend, and we were eating and watching TV and just really relaxing, and she started eating a chicken wing, and she said that she counted in her head, she was like 5, 4, 3, and then before she even got to 1, I lost it and I was like, why is it making that much noise? Chicken doesn't crunch, that means you're eating the wrong piece. And she was just in hysterics, and that's just I get to be as honest as I need to be with my friends, which is fun, and then just laugh about it.
Right. And when did you find out that it had that it was a real thing, that it had a name?
My cousin, I think me, my cousin and my brother, we all have it. And I think he sent me an article on Facebook quite a while ago now. And we were just all so happy that it had a name.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, it's a real thing. It's not just me.
Right. And did you write about misophonia even before that? Like before you even knew it had a name, or is that something that you started to write about afterwards?
No, I wrote about it after. Okay. Yeah.
What did you think it was before you knew it had a name? It was just like, me, my brother, and my cousin are just super sensitive to sounds.
It's a bit weird, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're just a bit weird, just runs in the family or whatever. Okay. Do you all have it kind of equally in your family?
I know me and my cousin have many a conversation where we can express it to each other about how much we've lost it because someone's eating a potato and it's really loud or something.
Yeah.
I know we all have it with the eating. I don't know if they've got the sight misokinesia thing as well.
Right, but it's just as intense, pretty much.
Especially my cousin.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And he's so passive. He's such a lovely guy. So calm, so easygoing, and he does like me. He feels like he loses the plot and loses his mind when somebody is chewing.
Interesting. Okay. So it's kind of been in your family. Have you guys talked about how, you know, you each have it, you're each in the same family? Have you kind of like, I don't know, theorized on maybe like the whole nature versus nurture kind of debate on misophonia? Like how did the three of us get it?
Yeah, no, I haven't actually. I have to do that.
And your brother, you and your brother growing up, like, did you guys talk about it? I'm curious how it was in the family. What did your parents think? Because I'm sure you were both kind of, you know, expressing it in your own ways growing up.
Hmm. You know, I would even think my mom has it slightly, if she can't cope with some sounds.
Yeah.
But I think that my family is a lot, probably where a lot of the humor came from it, because me and my brother have the same sense of humor and my mum. So we do mainly laugh at it, but we talk about it a lot, or we talked about it a lot. As in how frustrating that sound can be, or how annoying it is that people can't eat in a particular way. I have been at a table and not eating a meal until somebody else has finished because of the way they're eating. I'm like, wow, I can't look away, so I can't eat my food until you stopped. That's a horrible noise.
So you can't look away. Like, you can't look away
it's
from
a car crash. You can't look away. You can't stop hearing it. It's gross.
Yeah.
A lot of sounds and actions and lip smacking and.
Right. Yeah, it was fun when I was when you were originally talking about feeling nauseous while you're eating. When your kids are moving around, I thought initially you were going to talk about the typical being grossed out by people eating and then having that making it
can be.
So you have both
not
of those.
Very often.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's not very often anymore. And luckily I've never had the experience of being grossed out that much by someone in my family. Mm-hmm. It's just somebody that I'm sharing one meal with. I think it would be a completely different experience if I lived with somebody who ate like that.
Gotcha. What did you mean by it doesn't happen that much anymore? Is you're not grossed out as much anymore, or?
Oh, no, I'm still very, very grossed out. It's just that I guess maybe because of lockdown as well, we're not sharing that many meals with people
outside
of your household. But yeah, I have like been to lunch or to dinner with people and then eating cold food because I couldn't eat until they'd finished.
Uh-huh. Yes. And these are people that you've had meals with? Or do you just, and so, like, friends of yours and whatnot?
Some friends, or, like, if you go to a family gathering, it's extended family members.
I'm curious what your friends say if you're just sitting there watching them eat, and then they're finished, and then you're slurping everything down. Carry on a conversation. Kind of having two meals.
I do remember two incidents when that's happened, and the people that were eating didn't notice, which made it even funnier to me.
Right.
But my friends, my friends know me, so if they're eating and they're making a lot of noise, I will say, close your mouth, that's disgusting.
Right.
Or I'll just ask them, are you really enjoying that because you're making a lot of noise or something? It sounds like you're really enjoying that.
Oh, this would be hilarious. We'd have some hilarious meals, I think. And have you, other than your family members, do you have your friends have miso? Sounds like a bunch of people in your family have it. I'm curious if you bumped into other folks.
Yes, when I worked in the office, I met somebody else who had miso.
Oh, so gotcha.
That was great because she sat close to me.
Yeah.
And if she wasn't close to me, she'd get a very angry email from me about somebody who was eating, I don't know, nuts or crisps or something that just crunched really loud or slurped.
Yeah.
I did have a lady in that same office who everything she ate sounded like cat biscuits.
Mm.
You know, when cats chew and they don't close their mouth, that's how she ate.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Whenever that happened, I would just send an email to my friend, or I'd start complaining to my husband via email, like, oh my gosh, she's off again.
Right. Yeah. And when you're in, how long did you last in that office?
I a lot longer because I discovered headphones.
Yes. Yes. A fabulous invention. Fabulous invention.
Yeah. Genuinely saved my life.
Right.
That's probably actually why a lot of lockdown didn't bother me, because I always had headphones.
Yeah, right. And by the way, do you have, speaking of headphones, do you have like a favorite pair or kind of tips on what you look for in headphones?
Just the ones that are charged, as long as they're charged and I know they're charged. If they're not charged, that'll stress me out a little bit, because I'm like, oh my gosh, what if it says battery low halfway through?
That is the problem with these. That's the problem with these newfangled no wire headphones. Is there's always that fear. So I like to always just carry around like a bunch of cheap ass $5 wired ones.
Just in case,
because worst case you don't need the noise canceling or everything. You can just make it louder.
And I mean, to be honest, even in the office, I wouldn't even always have something on.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little bit of protection between me and that sound. So I could still hear when people were calling me or discussions that were happening sometimes.
Yeah.
So I might even just like keep them in for the whole day. And then if I heard someone chewing, I'll just put a song on or an audio book or something just to block it out for 5 or 10 minutes and then turn it off again.
So, and then coming off that office experience, did that experience kind of affect kind of what you looked for in a work environment after that?
I think it just made me very, very vocal about having misophonia. Like, that these sounds are very, very annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Office wouldn't be my first choice.
Right.
For many reasons now. But that would add to it.
Yeah. Right. So did you tell your bosses and whatnot at that point, that you had these issues, or you just you were out of there before you had a chance to do that?
No, I didn't. I mean, I was lucky enough that it was a job that I wasn't in the office all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have meetings that were outside almost every day.
Yeah.
I was never sat with one particular person for 7 days a week, except like 9 hours a day. That may alter my interaction with that kind of experience. I think it would be very, very intense if I sat with somebody all the time and they made those sounds. But I'd sit with them for maybe 3 hours on a Tuesday and then another 4 hours on a Thursday and not next week. And so it was very intermittent, luckily.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a little side note before I forget, I think this week I interviewed the second person I know that it lives in London and is in publishing. And so, so you'd actually, and so I know, I've talked to two people. One of them is Isabel, who that was published like earlier this year. She's in London, works in publishing, is trying to get her, her company to maybe, you know, publish more books about misophonia. And then talked to somebody, Claire, this week, and now you, and I know those two I've kind of introduced over email. Maybe I'll, I don't know if you're interested, I can get a little email group going with you.
We need a section in the library.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. where would that section go, do you think? Under
somewhere quiet.
True crimes or psychology? Yeah, somewhere quiet.
Yeah, mine would definitely be true crime.
Yeah, library's a great place. I mean, I love books, but some libraries sound like an infirmary or a hospital ward. But if you go in there with headphones, then it's beautiful.
Yeah.
So are you planning to write more books, maybe related to more stories related to misophonia, or was that kind of like a one-off inspiration?
I never rule it out. I haven't thought about another one at the moment, but at the same time, I never thought I would write Golden.
Right.
So, yeah, I think it would be interesting. I mean, I guess a children's book about misophonia would be good.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
To explain to children.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I wonder how that... Because there, I know I've been to the misophonia convention, and there was... I remember, you know, we were debating at one point, a few of us parents, like, should we... is this something that we should... you know, sit our kids down and tell them about, or should we just not draw attention to? I think the people are leaning more towards the latter because we're not just not sure like how this thing starts or gets activated. And is it really necessary at that point? Mm-hmm. So I just felt that the risk of it getting activated, not knowing exactly how this whole thing works, was just too great. Yeah, it's like this is something I'd wish it upon some enemies and some politicians, but most people I would not I would not wish this upon anybody. Yeah. So
I think the best thing for young children is just reassurance, like it's okay. I do think that a lot of their senses are heightened because they're younger. So they probably do have a lot more curiosity about, or they do anyway, about sounds. And my son is two, and he's always asking me, "What's that smell? What's that smell? What's that noise?" So they're just learning about the world. So I guess, the approach I'm taking is just reassurance about what sounds are, what smells are, what sights are, and then they can make their own decisions about things. And then I guess if they were particularly stressed by a sound or I might go into it a little bit more if they were older.
Right.
And that maybe that pre-pubescent stage where it starts to kick in for everybody. But other than that, just reassure them that the sound is this and it will stop, or think about something else. That's what I tell my daughter a lot. Just think about something else, and it'll go away. If you think about it, like you think about it more, then it gets bigger. But if you think about something else, it'll go away.
That's a great, that's great. That's a great tip for someone that age. What about your brother and your cousin? I mean, do they have kids too? If you kind of talk to them about that?
Yes, they both have children. I don't know what they've said to their children about misophonia, because their children actually are a little bit older.
Ask them. Yeah, interesting. I'd be curious if they're looking out for those signs. But the research thinking and the research that you've kind of done on reading on misophonia, are there any other kind of interesting insights that you've they've come across that maybe you haven't heard anywhere else, like on this podcast or in kind of in the popular literature on, you know, ways to cope, ways to understand misophonia?
I think the the strategy with the children is pretty universal. I think if you, again, Tony Robbins, but he says where focus goes, energy flows. So the more you think about something, the bigger it gets and the worse it is. I guess that that is an attitude that I do take to it, and to just keep the humor in there. Because once you can laugh it off, your adrenaline relaxes and you just feel better. I can't remember what, I think it's your cortisol you release, and you your muscles relax, you feel better. Whereas when you're experiencing focusing on the sound, you're in that adrenaline fight or flight, and you stiffen up and you're not relaxed and your heart's starting to race and your shoulders go up. So just using strategies that get you away from that feeling, I would say are the best things to focus on. So things that make you relax your shoulders, relax your muscles, smile, laugh. Just to make you feel better.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I think maybe we should end it on that note, I'm feeling very relaxed now, just thinking about that. Rachel, thanks for coming on, and thanks for writing Golden. Obviously, I'll have links to that in the show notes. Recommend everyone read that. And it's just interesting to read about me, so kind of on paper in a fictional setting, especially with an interesting story. Yeah, thanks again, and good luck with all your writings.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Rachel. Please do grab a copy of Golden, and if you have kids or no kids, check out her children's books. Holidays are coming up. Her books are perfect to send or give to your own children as a gift, and you can get them on Amazon and beyond. If you're enjoying the shows, you know what to do. Just smash that 5-star button on Apple Podcasts. Don't even have to write a review. Otherwise, hit me up on Instagram or Facebook at Misophonia Podcast, Twitter at Misophonia Show. If you're on Instagram, want to be in that Misophonia Podcast group chat, just DM me there. Music, as always, is by Moby. And until next week, wishing you peace and quiet.